Welcome to the Marshall Pro Podcast and your week in sports cars. This is a Flappy Gums episode, Graham Goodwin. It's just you and I talking, and frankly, it'll be mostly you. Let's say a massively appreciative thank you to our partners at Cooper Tires, the Justice Brothers, and TorontoMotorsports.com for supporting our show. And let's also say a big thanks to Aston Martin. Hey, we get to play in prototypes for the first time in a long time. And not with an Aston Martin motor stuck in the back of someone else's chassis. A real, true, proper, full-fledged Aston Martin LMH coming for 2025, Graham Goodwin. You're at the unveiling today. Spoke with some friends here. We're going to run those interviews at the end of the show. But why don't you tee us up, tell folks about not only what you saw today, but also there's quite a bit that you didn't have a chance to include in what you wrote about this. So let's get the ball rolling.
I think first things first, very much. Big thanks to Aston Martin. They've been excellent in allowing us to have a little bit of access to this to get things tidied up. But an astonishing day, really, Marshall. Three new race cars announced today by Aston Martin, as well as the Valkyrie LMH, new version, Evo version of the GT3 Vantage coming for 2024, and also a new version with a new powertrain of the Aston Martin Vantage GT4, also for 2024. Those latter two cars still with Aston Martin Racing Pro Drive, as we've been used to, but this Valkyrie is a whole new deal. It is a little bit of we told you so. We talked about this on the Week in Sports Cars as late, as long ago as, I think, July. And to be blunt, more or less everything we said back then has come to pass. What did we see? Well, we saw a top table for this press launch with Lawrence Stroll, with Adam Carter, the new head of endurance racing at Aston Martin, and with Ian James from Heart of Racing, because they're going to be a key part of this program. It's a full works entry, initially announcing one car apiece for the whole World Endurance Championship and the whole of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Two separate teams, two separate bases, both under the Aston Martin Heart of Racing banner for 2025. So hugely exciting. It is a bit of a revival, MP, of the cancelled, postponed, call it what you will, Valkyrie LMH, but obviously things have moved on a little since then. But all sorts of significant firsts for this car.
So the LMH side is the fascinating bit for me. Need to do some digging into this, obviously, to get IMSA's side on this, but per the press release, we're expecting not only the full season 2025 World Endurance Championship campaign, factory campaign, fits perfectly. This would be, unless someone beats them to the punch, the first hypercar running in IMSA's GTP class. And again, this has been announced as a full factory, full season campaign starting in 2025. What can you tell us about that, Graham? Because at least for what we've had this year on debut, and for what we know is coming next year with Lamborghini, it is all under the LMDH formula. IMSA has not yet had to integrate a LMH into its top class.
Well, I think you'll hear some answers to questions to both Ian James and Adam Carter in the clips you can be playing out after our section here. But I think there are a couple of things to say. You're absolutely right. It is an LMH. LMH allows a race car to be integrated into this new GTP and hypercar class, this Converge class, based on a road car. And it very much is based on a road car, albeit it's based on the AMR Pro version of the road car, which in itself was based on the original concept for the original hypercar. There are, though, some things about this car that are going to allow that integration, I think, a little more easily. The first is the powertrain. No hybrid. No four-wheel drive system. That's going to help enormously. It is the 6.5 litre, at least it is in road car version, V12, normally aspirated V12 from Cosworth, that is being adapted with the assistance of the investment that's come from Gabe Newell and the Heart of Racing. We trailed that back in July without naming names, because that would seem to have been rude at the time, but firmly well aware that was the individual involved here. So I think the fact that you've not got that front axle, that front motor-driven part of the LMH formula is going to help that process. What I would say is both on and both on the record and in conversations off tape, there's been nothing other than positive things to say from Aston Martin's point of view, from Harder Racing's point of view, about the level of engagement they're getting from IMSA, who will surely welcome another manufacturer coming to their GTP class.
Going to do the very professional thing here, and I will readily admit this up front. I'm going to need you to share some really interesting things about the car and about this announcement for about the next 4 to 5 minutes. Why I need to go gather some deliveries that have just arrived at the door, as Ms. Pruitt has informed me.
That's fine. I mean, let's start. I mean, there is a bit of a timeline, of course, with the Aston Martin Valkyrie announced back in, 2017, 2016? And then with Aston Martin saying that they would be one of the establishing manufacturers for the new hypercar class, due, of course, to start in 2021, then pulling that program back in 2020 as Aston Martin refocused on refinancing and a refocusing on Formula One, as well as GTE at that time for their motorsport aspirations. That car then effectively morphed into the track-only AMR Pro, and one of those cars was at the launch today, and it is a spectacular-looking beast. Heart of Racing, Gabe Newell, has one of those cars, and that car has been running. That pretty clearly has been part of the lighting the fire underneath this prospect from a very early stage. But it is not as simple as putting race numbers and making that car go racing. All sorts of things will need to be done with that car. A very extensive engine program with Cosworth, who are firmly on board with this, to bring that car back from somewhere over 1,100 horsepower to the 690 horsepower that is permitted in the formula. You've then got the aero aspect of this. Valkyrie, anybody that's seen even pictures of the car will understand that it effectively is, you know, a car-sized aerodynamic device. So that will need to be reeled back in to ensure that that's within the parameters that are permitted for lift and drag for the downforce for the GTP class, the hypercar class. Beyond that, there's two other aspects. Packaging for the Valkyrie AMR Pro was done to make that car a two-seater. Well, that will now be repackaged. So all the electronics on the AMR Pro that's currently hidden at various parts of the car, on the side pods, etc., will go back where they were initially designed to be, which is in and around the cockpit area. And that's part of the final task that needs to be undertaken to get this car to where it needs to be. It's a fast car. The AMR Pro is a very, very fast car. But what it's not is a race car. It doesn't meet homologation, and it doesn't meet the serviceability that you need for a pure endurance race car. What does that mean? It means you've got to be able to run do running repairs on that car during an endurance race. It means that there will need to be front and rear clips developed for that car. It means the side structures of that car will need to be easily transferable. It means that rather than an AMR Pro that, frankly, MP, is designed for, you know, albeit a long day's track day, it's not been designed for 24 hours. So it will need to be looked at in those terms as well. But what we saw today for the first time, which is Aston Martin's technology campus at Silverstone, absolutely impressive and enormous. They have been working on this program already, they tell us, for several months, and will continue to do so alongside the race program, test program underway, we believe, quarter two of 2024, with homologation currently planned for late in the autumn, with a race debut planned in the United States of America at the Rolex 24 Hours in 2025, with, I'll repeat it one more time, at least one car, clearly an aspiration to see whether or not there might be two available at Le Mans. And clearly an aspiration beyond that, once they've dealt with all of the engineering challenges that lie ahead, to see whether or not budgets can be grabbed and whether or not space can be found on what's an increasingly crowded grid for the FIWEC, for the full World Endurance Championship.
Speaking of aspiration, that is the thing that I might look forward to the most here, Graham. As our listeners have heard me say for many, many years, in my dream world, I am running the all V12s in four rotor Mazda racing series. The fact that we get in 2025 a naturally aspirated V12 in the top class at Le Mans, in WEC, in IMSA is phenomenal. One thing to keep in mind, part of what makes that Cosworth designed and built V12 so incredible in the Valkyrie is the fact that it's extremely high revving. Again, 1,000 horsepower, you name it. We would expect the rev count to come down a bit, right? When you have such a high revving engine, it means that you're making power all the way to the top of that rev range. And knowing that we're going to be running without hybridization, and we're going to have that class limit of 680-ish horsepower, so we can expect the revs to come down, but I don't think we're going to lose the amazing audio signature, even if a couple thousand RPMs are pulled down. But nonetheless, we're going to be... what we're going to have, Graham, and this just... we need to delve into this a little bit. So we've had this rather amazing debut season for GTP / hypercars with lots of subscription in the WEC, similar in IMSA and GTP. Next year, we will be adding Lamborghini. Pretty cool, too, in that we're adding another constructor, right? We have Liger that will be getting involved here. Really amazing looking forward yet again, brother. So four unique marks here in GTP to start this formula off in 2023. We'll be up to five next year with the Baby Bull Lamborghini. We'll be up to six in 2025, right? At least we know that on your side in WEC, we again hope we might be seeing something over here from Alpine, but we know Alpine will be getting in. I'm just looking over here saying that not too far from now, we will have six factory efforts running along with however many customer cars might be in the mix as well. We'll see if more than just Porsche is going to allow some of their models to be purchased and run by privateers by 2025. But I do know that at least here, Graham, the thought that in 2025 we will have at a minimum of a half dozen, six fully engaged manufacturers raging like mad in GTP. Yep. I've never seen anything like this. And, and just to close this and hand it off to you to share your thoughts on what things will look like in WEC and Hypercar in 2025. As a younger man who was very fortunate to have worked in the original IMSA GTP series, back in 1990, I mean, I'm thinking to the peak days where we had the TWR Jaguar program factory. We had Nissan with Electromotive / NPTI. We had Toyota. We had Mazda. We had Porsche, not so much factory by end of the 80s, early 90s and such, but we had four to maybe five factory, right? We had a brief run by Chevrolet with the Intrepid factory program. So, again, I'm throwing in Porsche just because there were so many 962s, admittedly pretty much all in privateer hands, whether it was the Dysons or Yost or run down the list. But we had four really strong, active factory GTP programs, a fifth with Chevrolet in there for a brief period with the Intrepid. And we kind of add in Porsche as a sixth just because they were always there, thereabouts. This, though, is unquestioned full activation from Acura, BMW, Cadillac, Porsche, add in Lamborghini, add in Aston Martin. And again, who knows if we might have some more by then. I truly, brother, cannot think of a time in North American top-tier factory-based prototype racing where we will have this many automotive manufacturers saying, we're all in, let's go to war.
Yeah, and here's the thing, and you will look at the FI World Endurance Championship, certainly in FIWC history, which doesn't go back that long, it's unparalleled, but you go back to the World Sports Car Championship, and, well, this year, if you include Glickenhaus, as we should, and you include the team known as Van Wall, as we should, seven. Even if a couple of those go away, and I think they might, we've got four more coming next year. You know, we're going to be up at nine, I think, at the least next year, and then add on to that Aston Martin 10, if everybody sticks around. And if, you know, what we think is going to happen with the fantastic announcement we saw from Honda and from HPD just some weeks ago, if Honda then come to the WC as well, we're into double figures of factory efforts. And there's another part to this, by the way, MP, that occurred to me only yesterday, which is, Lawrence Stroll was in the chair for this press conference this morning, and we sat in the technology campus, which, make no mistake, exists because of Formula One. This is Aston Martin committing to Formula One and a top-class sports car program. Ferrari have done the same. Alpine are doing the same. Honda are doing the same. And then beyond that, you look at what else is kicking around with other makes and marks that are kind of committing as well. This, if you like, is for me the absolutely unparalleled part of this. And it also exposes where I think a bit of the secret to this is. We talked over the last couple of years about the potential for technology transfer and the kind of the data engineering that goes with it and the use of the program staff that otherwise might find themselves falling victim to cost capping in Formula One. This is where it's paying off. Is you've got multiple world-class global OEMs committing to two major world championship level programs. That's absolutely unparalleled. You know, we're talking here across the board within the next couple of years of manufacturers into double figures. And this is without other things that may well emerge, by the way. There are others still sitting in the background here that could still come forward. You know, stand up McLaren. When are you going to take the wraps off what I believe is not a program that has gone away? And others too, significant names that are out there and undergoing at least evaluation of their programs. This ain't done yet. And I've not even mentioned customer cars. You know, that to me, as we've said time and time again, MP, is the truly exciting part of this, because what does that bring? It brings sustainability. It brings sustainability as the costs begin, we hope, we think, to come down with these cars when numbers start to become more of it. Inevitably, some of the factories will go away after 2 or 3 years. But you know, I've already got, honestly, partial stories galore in my back pocket of significant players in sports car racing and beyond that are actively evaluating and planning for customer hypercar and GTP entries moving forward. That, my friend, is, I think, just as exciting as the numbers game we can play and drool quietly as we do so. Can't wait for 2024. 2023, make no mistake, absolutely epic. Highlights of the year, GTP at the Rolex 24, Hypercar at the Le Mans 24 Hours. You know, absolutely world-beating events, fantastic racing, and new eras sprouting. But then we get more. We can be greedy now. Then we get more in 2024. Then we get more in 2025. And while all that is happening, my friend, what you've got is a large number of racing organizations looking to do what they can do to get on this track, to get onto this this program, to get into GTP, to get into hypercar, and give us deeper and deeper fields for, I hope, the next 3 to 5 years at the very least.
I'm also so thankful that we've been blessed and gifted one other thing, a new hashtag. Hashtag stories galore Goodwin. So that's pretty cool. Well, why don't we... We'll cover off two other items and then welcome in the interviews that you recorded. Let's talk about Meyershank Racing in just a moment.
Yep.
I'm going to mention that I just got back from 5 days in Monterey for Porsche's Rennsport Amazing. Reunion 7, which was just phenomenal. And I didn't see a lot outside. I saw the paddock a number of times, Graham, but I didn't really get trackside to see cars run almost at all. And here's why.
But you heard them.
I heard them. But here's the reason why. Our friends at Porsche, Tom Moore, who's one of the kind folks there, sent a list maybe a month, 2 months ago and said, hey, here's the list of legends that will be at the event. Who would you like to interview? I said, well, I have my Pelican case with my podcasting mixer and microphones and headsets and you name it already in Monterey. So let's go ahead and do something a little more serious than just to sit down at a table for a couple minutes. And I'll even bring a couple of video cameras, try and do some real great capturing here of these legends. Since again, we only have RenSport every 3 to 5 years. Obviously the last one was 2018, didn't have its follow-up due to COVID. So it's been a little while, but also some of these legends, you know, getting a little bit up in age. Obviously we hope they'll all still be with us for many RenSports to come, Graham, but nonetheless, there does come a point where lucidity is a bit of an issue. So said, let's really make an effort to capture a bunch. I just looked, brother, 1.2 terabytes of video captured. Most of these interviews, 20 minutes at minimum, 30-ish is about the norm. Some of them 45 to an hour long. Let me just read off the list, and I will get to these as soon as I can, but holy cow, this is a lot of work because, again, it's not just audio. And I think I'll release all these as straight audio podcasts. I know that some folks today refer to video as a podcast, but it's not, but that's okay. But anyways, I'll whip up the videos as I'm able to and post those on my YouTube. But let me run through the list of those who I sat down and interviewed again for at least 20 minutes, but usually 30 or more. We started off Thursday morning with Derek Bell, legendary German photographer Rainer Schlegelmilch, and then moved into Hurley Haywood, Jackie Ix, Jörg Bergmeister, Thierry Boutsen, let me keep rolling here, Danny Sullivan, David Hobbs, Kevin Jeanette, Margie Smith-Haas, Mark Weber, Rob and Chris Dyson, Alvin Springer, Brian Redman, Jeff Zwart, Jim Busby, Norbert Singer, and Stefan Johansson. And I feel like I have forgotten a couple. Ari Leyendijk, David Donahue.
It's like racing driver bingo. Ari won race Leyendijk.
Yeah, good old Harry Lunatic. Porsche legend. David Donahue, and good old, as I love to pronounce it in my best Beavis and Butthead, Romain Dumath. Romain Dumas, good old Romain Dumas, and had, again, fascinating stuff with Romain. Donahue in particular, so again, I don't know what that count is, 20 plus, but yeah, of the things
there's
that I'm
cracking
so...
cracking stuff to come.
Brother, I am so happy more than anything, not more than anything, but I got Steph... good old Steve Johnson, a.k.a. Stefan Johansson, to tell his Planes, Trains, and Automobiles 1984 Sebring winning story. Ooh. On camera. So he's already given it to us in podcast. I've written a whole piece about that for Road and Track. But to see the animation in Steph telling that story, oh my goodness. But here's, we did some other fun stuff. Might have seen some of this hopefully on Racer. Just this morning went up a tour of the AO Racing offerings with Gunnar Jeanette and all the amazing cars they brought. Did a paddock tour, which is a lot of fun. Did a, thanks to Porsche, Pat Long and AO Racing, looked at the three generations of American themed Porsche prototypes, which you were kind enough to pick up and run on dailysportscar.com. Absolutely. As well, Graham. But here's the thing I'm most excited about, and this will take me a little while to edit. Actually take me a while. So on Friday, so I'd been there since Wednesday, and Friday, I don't know why it took the light bulb so long to go on. I'm like, hey, the Porsche 919 Hybrid Evo is here. I don't know.
It was the Evo?
Yeah. I don't know, and it didn't have all the Evo bits on it, but or the tribute or whatever you want to, whatever they name that. But it occurred to me, and I could be wrong. Maybe there's a great video done by somebody somewhere that goes in depth and shows everything. But at least to my knowledge, no one's ever done a full bodywork off tech tour. Look at all the systems.
No.
Get up close.
No, they didn't.
Show all the amazing stuff. You know who I did it with? Our pal, Mark Lieb. Because now Mark, having been one of the amazing 919 hybrid drivers, is now, I forget his exact title.
Le Bon winner.
Yeah, not only those two things, but he's now a manager of
Head of sport communications.
Right.
I believe so. I think he's head of sport communication.
Yeah. It's funny. We had Mark Weber on the schedule, and although it was on Porsche's schedule, apparently they failed to inform Mark. So I'm standing there and waiting and waiting and waiting, and nothing's happening. And we ended up rescheduling for the following day, but Mark freaking Lieb walks or escorts Mark from halfway across the paddock over to the media center for me. I'm like, geez, Mark, I love you, man, but this is maybe a little bit below your pay grade here of shepherding drivers and whatnot. He's like, nope, happy to do it. But what was great about this, Mark told me one thing, which he said, please don't mention this on camera. So we didn't, but he was sharing all kinds of other amazing facts and facets. Filmed all this, our friends at Tangent Vector, the ones who film Win the Weekend on behalf of IMSA and Michelin. They were kind enough to film this for us. So we just walked around the whole thing, talked about as much as we could, numbers and figures and you name it. So yeah, full 919 hybrid, the world's greatest prototype. Right, there's been nothing that is better, faster, higher concept, higher achievement since it was retired at the end of 2017. But yeah, I can't wait for that, Graham, for folks to see that, because fabulous. With the bodywork off, you just, again, if you're a fan of engineering, technical side, you name it, you just stare. And there was one item in particular that I was not aware of until I was able to step right up and look at it. And said, huh, how does that work? And I grabbed Mark, and he looked at me and said, I don't know. And so we grabbed one of the mechanics who was looking after the car at the event, who was one of the factory mechanics while it was running and active and beating everything in the WEC. And through a lot of German to English translation and back and forth, we kind of sort of figured out how it worked. But even then, I'm like, oh, my gosh. The fact that you guys went to that effort to shape and fashion this and run this in this direction, like the amount of effort required to do that is just insane. So it's just a lot of little things like that. Looking at the MGU-H, right? The heat-based electric turbo, which probably was kept more top secret than anything on the car. It was just a blast, brother. So going to be getting to that as soon as I can here. Sometime in the off season, but let's wrap on a thing that we've known about for a long time and we've not wanted to put too fine of a point on, because we've been hoping Meyer-Shank Racing would indeed conclude a deal with manufacturer A, B, or C, or be tasked with running someone else's major program to keep them in IMSA in 2024. That formally confirmed yesterday on Tuesday will not be happening. Like you to give some perspective here, brother, because I know I've done a lot of opining about it since 5 weeks after their Rolex 24 win, the cheating that they did, the blatant cheating that the team did, which certainly played a role in their ability to win the race, came to light. We know that they've decided to, thankfully, keep all of their sports car crew on the payroll. So although they don't have anything for 2024, they're confident they will for 25. And so good on them for making sure the amazing men and women who are part of that IMSA GTP program will be employed, will be safe, waiting for the next thing to come along. But give me your thoughts, Graham. Is this is this the racing gods settling the score? Hey, you cheated in a big public manner, and therefore the big thing you had has been taken away. Is that too harsh on Honda / Acura's side? Where does this land with you now that we know with finality this is the outcome?
Well, first things first, whatever happened in January and beyond, it's a source of deep regret. We're not going to have Marchant racing on the IMSA grid in 2024. Let's get it right. The big sin here wasn't cheating. It was getting caught cheating. Because zero doubt in my mind that they were not the only ones playing those very same games. And, you know, the key to this game is finding where you can get away with stuff and then getting away with it. And, you know, dig deep enough into the machinations about every major motor race around the world and someone's doing something. There are an infinite number of cases of this. But for right now, it's deep regret that they won't be there. That's number one. A real hope that they find a way back because they are undoubtedly a team of quality. It is that I hope that everybody involved in what did happen in January and beyond, frankly, has learned some lessons from that, including, by the way, the ones that weren't caught. I think and hope everybody should have learned lessons from that. We're entering into this, you know, we spent the first 15 minutes of this podcast, MP, reflecting on just how awesome this new era is proving to be and will continue to be. Everybody's going to be looking for an edge, and not everybody's going to be doing that, being absolutely upfront and clean about it. I sincerely hope this is a lesson that shows that some of the guys who perhaps think they're being smart, they're not quite as smart as they thought they were. And I hope we can go forward with the sport being clean. I hope the team, the individuals involved in the decision-making processes that led to that, but those behaviours have learned from it, have learned that there are significant consequences to it, which include financial consequences to it. You know, shelving any kind of program at this level comes with a price tag for sure. And I hope beyond that, that smart people elsewhere, when the people behind Marchant Racing come and do their penance and bid for whatever comes next, remember there, but for the grace of God, go I. And that this should be seen as being an effort of quality that has learned those lessons and can come back with their heads held high. I hope that's the case. I've absolutely no agenda whatsoever against that team. They did it. They got caught doing it. They've been punished for it, and they've been punished twice now for it. And the second part must have really stung. But time now, I think, to look to the next chapter. I wish them well, all of them. You'll still be seeing them on your IndyCar travels for certain, and I think you've got every chance of being pretty quick to the punch if and when they find a way back. I'm sort of glad that they've opted not to do something watered down. Walk away, regroup, come back punching, find a program that is worthy of the talent of that group.
Amen. Graham, why don't you give an intro to Ian first and then Dave after. Why don't you give us some closing intros, and then I'll roll those in to wrap the episode.
We will indeed. And just a couple of interviews picked up from that PR bonanza at the Aston Martin Technology Campus just about an hour ago. And the first words you'll hear are from Ian James from Heart of Racing, who explains just briefly the level of their involvement and indeed how long this program has been in the planning. He'll also confirm, by the way, they are going to continue in GT racing next year with the new look Aston Martin Vantage Evo GT3 in the GTD classes of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. After that, you'll hear from a new voice for this podcast, Adam Carter, and that's a name and a voice we're going to get familiar with because that is the man that is going to be responsible for Aston Martin's endurance racing endeavors.
And by Dave, I meant, of course, Adam, but maybe we'll just call him
Dave. I thought
we'll
you did say Dave. Adam, but never mind.
No, let's call him Dave for now.
I think
he won't get it.
I think he'd like that. But lots of depth here. It was Adam that got to do, I can't remember the last time this happened, announcing three new Aston Martin race cars today, all of which we will see for the first time in 2024 with the GT3 and the GT4 car racing next year and the Valkyrie starting to test next year. And whatever else that Valkyrie will be, Marshall Pruitt, I can tell you right now, that's going to be one of those cars that when you close your eyes, you'll know it's that car going by.
Amen. Mention here to close forget to do this on the show, Graham, and it's my fault because I'm not very smart in the head, but we have a pretty amazing listener group that has formed around the show a couple years ago, led by John Wojnar and some other really keen folks. They call themselves the Prude, which is modeled off my last name, P-R-U-E, and then the name of my favorite WWE tag team, which is no longer together, the New Day. But anyways, they're a lot of fun. They get together on a daily basis on Discord and solve all the world's problems, talk about racing, pop culture, just a fun group. Folks, they're part of our tribe. And so I mention them frequently because they probably orbit mostly around the IndyCar side of what I do, Graham, but they also are more and more and increasingly interested in sports cars. So if you want to join that new family, check out the description here for the episode. It's an email address, pruderocks@gmail.com, that I list. And send them an email. I'm not a member of the group, nor should I be, but you'll get a little automated response how to join. And yeah, got a tribe here you might consider joining, because I really do care for a lot of those folks, Graham. They're a whole heck of a bunch of
fun. They are awesome. I've just actually sent you a quick message, MP, and I'm going to ask whether
or not
we can trail
something.
Oh, you
shouldn't be sending me those photos. Oh, my God.
Filth. Oh, boy. We're a little bit late to the punch with this, and if you can't, if you're too slammed, you can edit this tiny part out, I'm sure. But recorded a quick piece in Fuji. You mentioned AO Racing a little earlier with Gunnar Jeanette, with PJ Hyatt, talking about the phenomenon that has become the Rexy and Roxy story and what comes next with that. And there is something a bit different for the Marshall Pruitt podcast and for the Week in Sports Cars, with a giveaway of a limited edition signed Fuji Edition Rexy t-shirt. So as and when MP can get that together,
try and do that later this
schedule,
week, for sure.
Absolutely.
I'll add this to my little
and that
note.
Will be, yeah, and that will be something where we are going to be requesting responses via Twitter. There is a question involved in that podcast. We're going to be asking for the answer to a slightly unusual question on Twitter, and you can win a very limited edition signed by all three drivers from Fuji, Rexy Fuji t-shirts. Well, I think of only 150 they had at that point.
Wow. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Like Prince, the social media platform formerly known as Twitter, we now call X, although I don't call it X. But yeah, have it on my list to try and fire that out later this week. Graham, thank you, brother. Let's get going with Ian and then Dave, a.k.a. Adam, and we'll speak to y'all here very soon.
Well, with Ian James, after what has got to be said is a really exciting set of announcements for Heart of Racing, for Aston Martin as a whole, for the WEC and for IMSA. Start with the journey here. You said in the press conference it's been some time in the kind of the making this. Give us a bit of a timeline in terms of your involvement, Heart of Racing's involvement, Gabe's involvement in this that brought us here today.
Yeah, I think if we're realistic, if we look over the last 12 months, as a team, we've been having more and more success on the GT front. I think we've validated ourselves as a race team. And so the conversation has come up from time to time about hypercar, and if we were to be involved, what would that look like? And obviously, it's been a journey for Aston as a car company recently. But they seem to be, you know, forging forward on a lot of fronts. And I think this was just another chapter of that, you know. So I think they had the comfort level to see if we could put a deal together, and I'm glad we did.
Explain to me, it's a works program. Heart of Racing will run the program with Aston Martin. How does this synergy work? It's not just stickers on the car.
No, it's definitely not stickers on the car, purely. I mean, Heart of Racing will be the operating entity for the cars. But we'll work in close conjunction with Aston through the life of the program.
It is the first time at the moment, as far as we know, that an LMH spec car, albeit a non-hybrid car, will run with IMSA. At what stage are you with the conversations with our friends in North America about how happy they'll be to see this car?
Yeah, I mean, we've had some initial conversations. I think they're excited to see a new car come. Obviously, Aston Martin is an iconic brand, and it gives, you know, status to any series. We're in the heyday of sports car racing, and to see the more manufacturers as possible on the grid, I think, is a great thing. But I'll leave it up to Adam and his group to work out the technicalities of what it looks like when it arrives.
We always look at exactly what the words are spoken during these announcements, and the words been spoken so far is at least one car in WC, at least one car in IMSA. that sort of sounds as if it's not quite total job done yet. How would you quantify the possibility of seeing more of these fantastic cars?
Yeah, I mean, if you look on the Le Mans grid, for example, I mean, there's normally a bit of more strength in numbers, you know, and to at least double your chances of success would be a wise choice. But until, you know, we hear from the ACO and IMSA about, you know, entry possibilities, it's hard to make those decisions. But, you know, if it was up to us, we'd probably like to see two on the grid for those iconic races.
Final question is about the heartland of Heart of Racing. We've heard as well there's new GT3 car coming, new GT4 car coming. What about 24 and beyond that as far as the GT programs are concerned?
Yeah, I think Heart of Racing was born out of the GT programs. And, you know, so we're going to continue on the GT front. Next year we'll be back, you know, the same as we were this year. We'll have an involvement GT4, GT3. And to be honest, I can see it going for a long time.
Hey, James, thanks so much. Adam Carter.
Yep.
Congratulations. It's not only do we have one new car, but three new cars effectively confirmed today. We'll talk about the other two. Because the big story, of course, is the return of Aston Martin, the top class of endurance racing, with a fascinating programme, a reborn programme, if you like, with the, got to be said, gorgeous Valkyrie. You've got a lot of work done, but there's an awful lot to do. Tell us a little bit about where we are at the moment with the programme and what's still on the to-do list.
So, it's where we are is the programme, let's say Q1 of 23 was when I was set task of can we do it, is it the appropriate platform, can we go and be competitive, understand. So that kind of work around the programme, around the things, was all done at the beginning of 23, say. Through that, then it started to, the foundations were built, started to look at partners. So it looked at a number of different partners, looked with Heart of Racing, what they've been doing in GT, and, you know, how they operate, how they present, how they work, what they did in Daytona this year, etc. It's like that was a good indication of them being a great partner to work with. So we went through all of that, and I started to lay more and more engineering work down and using some of the resources here to start laying things out. And it was around, the centenary event in June when it was like, if we're going to do this, let's all look at each other in the eye and say we're going to do it, because we're not ready to say we're doing it. But if we all think we're going to get there, then I need to start setting things in motion. So in terms of the chassis work and the engine work, we've been ramping, because nothing starts from a standstill, so we've been ramping up since the middle of this year.
It's an interesting combination. Heart of Racing, well known to our listeners, our readers, of course, as being a force in GT racing. We know their enthusiasm for the brand and to go further. How early were they part of this discussion?
I started looking at it sort of Q1, and I'd say somewhere between Sebring and Le Mans is where it's like, okay, we've gone through, it could be X, Y, and Z. And actually, if we're going to do this, Heart of Racing is the partner of choice.
It's a works effort, and I think this is where I guess we get the opportunity to ask you the question and to clear up any possible confusion. It's a works effort, but with a partner team.
Yeah. So it's a partnership. It is a genuine partnership. And for Aston Martin to put the wings on a race car at Le Mans is a massive deal, because it can't be done unless it is a works deal. It has to be done right. We have to go at it. And we have the support of AML at Gaydon, so of the road car business. Here, we're operating out of the AMRTC here. You've got access to the resources here in order to support it as necessary. So it's as and when required, we can sort of plug in and leverage resources here. And everything we've set up with our power unit partner as well is around it being, it's a works program. It has to be supported in such a way.
I'll ask the question, is this going to be an entirely new work setup? We obviously have had Aston Martin works cars run through AMR previously. Is this a new deal?
With the partnership part of racing, so it's their completely trusted partner to go and deliver the race operation, and then the engineering operation will be led by AMPT. So there's a collective on the engineering side, so led by myself, and then there's the Cosworth, etc., and to get the integration of all of those partners to work together, because whilst they're separate entities, it has to be formed that everybody's a single, operates as a single entity and a single partnership in order to have that full under kind of under one umbrella and one house commitment to the program. So,
intriguing wording, which I'm sure you would expect us all to pounce upon at the start of this announcement, where it said at least one car each in WC and IMSA. Expand on that.
So it's at least one car on the basis of what we've said is to do the program, one car in IMSA, one car in WEC. That is the minimum we're going to do. Would we like to get to two cars in WEC? Yes. So there's opportunities for us to do that, but also rather than going full head first diving in, it's totally respecting the challenge in front of us, and it's respecting that and say, okay, let's put the program together, let's build it, because also more cars means more people, more things, and the more cars, more people is not the problem. It's growing the teams and growing the integration, because it was mentioned before, getting everything to work together and everybody plugged in. And is that's the difference. So it's getting total harmony within the team, because actually a second car can be unless it's 100% in harmony, it's actually detrimental. So we need to build on it. But we've got opportunities and milestones in the program at which we can flip it to two cars in either of them.
Big part of Aston Martin's race history, and a big part of the appeal of this formula in hypercar and in GTP is the prospects of customer cars. What do we think the prospects and when for customer Valkyrie?
There's opportunities available within the program, but as we stand here today, it's Aston Martin with the heart of racing, and to go forward today, that's our key objective, is to build them, and if we can grow into more cars with them, we can. Also, we could even look at customer cars within Heart of Racing, kind of partnership, etc. as well. So it's not something on the agenda or horizon today, but there are opportunities to do it. But realistically, we need to focus on 25. We've chosen our partners with very specific reasons, because of when we did the assessment, it's like, these are the guys to do it. They've got the right ethos, because of the ethos of Heart of Racing, what that team's based around from their owner, their funder and owner and founder. They're very specific about what their ethos, about how they conduct business and life, and it aligns very well with Aston Martin. They, in terms of funding as well, they can contribute to the funding with it as well, so it takes us to another level of what we can do to go actually with the full intent winning. And our full intent now is about taking that program forward with them. They're the ones we've chosen to do it with, so that's today's focus. And as the platform proves itself, then I'm sure if we get customer inquiries, I think that'll be flattering of what we've achieved.
Your background is very much cutting-edge motorsport engineering. What's the biggest challenge here? Is it engineering the AMR Pro, as the, if you like, the baseline car here, back to a regulated level, or is it preparing this car to be raceable and serviceable?
Neither of them faze me at all.
I should say, by the way, he didn't even smirk when I said that.
It's neither of them faze me. It's just engineering. It's work. It's just about holding. It's about making sure you've got the right resources on the right thing at the right time all the time, and holding to plan, and holding people to account on tasks. In terms of the actual program, the biggest thing is making sure you've got the right plan. And when I say plan, not just we need to do it, it's how are we going to validate the car? What are we going to do? Where's the wind tunnel test? How are we going to approach it? And keep the milestones and checkpoints in along that way as we go through. And, you know, it's in terms of the engineering work, we've got Cosworth in Northampton there. They're a phenomenal company with such a great history in race engine design. It's Bruce Wood there is fantastic. They're so energized for this program to return to Pinnacle Motorsport, to go to Le Mans, because they're they are absolutely full throttle over there and absolutely buzzing for it. Here, we've got such great people. This whole building is just full of people who love competition and love engineering. And this is a place you come to work to effectively measure yourself in competition. It's engineering to be measured and things, and it's just people buzzing. So actually doing the work and getting through those technical challenges doesn't faze me at all, because I've got such a great bunch of people here to push through it.
Just wanted to move on, ask a couple of questions about the other two cars that effectively previewed today. Yeah. We've not seen them yet, but new versions of the Aston Martin Vantage GT3 and Aston Martin Vantage GT4. You mentioned, I think, in a Q&A that there'll be a carryover powertrain for the GT3, new powertrain for the GT4. Is it the same platform? What are we going to see?
Same platform. So, being blunt, they are, whilst the cars aren't officially named yet in terms of what their model name will be, but they are being developed under the Evolution homologation set. So they are based on the existing Vantage cars. The GT3 is being developed in order to meet all of the global regs, so it'll be applicable to GT3 and GT3 LM, so it fits within all the regulation sets. The GT4 is effectively going to be based on the new road car. The road car company have announced there's a new Vantage coming, and it will be based on that car, whereas the GT3 is actually taking the existing GT3 car and that car pushing it forward. Let's say the GTE had been extremely successful, the GT3 had been successful, but had some traits that could be addressed in order to make it better in the GT3 category, especially in the Pro-Am kind of environment. And the new car is very much focused about taking that forward.
And that partnership with AMR at ProDrive continues?
Absolutely, they're a great partnership with us. They do a great product, and they operate as a great team, and they've got a great position in the industry. So we've got a commitment to them for a number of years ahead of us in order to take GT3 and GT4 platforms forward.
Can't wait to see this new trio, particularly the Valkyrie, hitting the track, and I'm sure all our listeners will agree with us. Adam, thanks very much.
You're welcome.